This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I am Scott Lewis, the CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego. And I'm joined, as always, by assistant editor Andrew Keats. Hello, Andy.
Scott, how you doing, bud?
Pretty well. Thank you. Sarah Libby joins us, managing editor. How are you?
Doing well.
This week is all about the 101 Ash Street debacle. We did not slog through this scandal about a building downtown for so many years for nothing. In a blitz of revelations this week, we finally got some answers. We'll lay it out how we got here and what we learned Monday and Tuesday. Plus, there's now a new mystery. Can't answer everything after all. We got to keep going. We're going to give you the history and our analysis right now. So stay with us, your Voice of San Diego podcast. So this week, San Diego City Attorney Mara Elliott got the city council to agree to pursue litigation to completely unwind the city's lease-to-own arrangement with 101 Ash Street. That's that former Sempra headquarters right behind our building. It's behind it because ours is clearly in front, correct?
Metaphorically.
The city has never been able to move workers into that building, but she also seeks to unwind the earlier, sort of less controversial lease-to-own deal that the city did at Civic Center Plaza. That is the tower that actually houses her office right across the plaza from City Hall itself. Now, she's doing this because she believes that the city's volunteer real estate advisor, Jason Hughes from Hughes Marino, commercial brokerage, who was supposedly a volunteer for the city for many, many years, actually got paid $10 million, nearly $10 million in the deals. He did not disclose the payments. She says that was a violation of the state's conflict of interest laws, and thus those deals can be completely reversed. Fair summary of the news this week?
That's the news. What you said is what happened this week, and it is crazy.
Kind of buried in there, not buried, but highlighted in there, is that he got paid nearly $10 million. Even though,
First that was the news,
right?
Yeah, that's like the revelation. That's the revelation is that this. So Lisa just a few months ago wrote a story, sort of investigating Jason Hughes' role and relationship to this whole thing, and you know, I would say very much treated it like an outstanding question about whether or not he had been paid. Lots of people sort of thought he did or thought he might have. People were asking that. And I mean, when I say people, I don't necessarily just mean the press. I mean, people in the City Hall structure and involved in the deal had been asking that question to one another. And we now know that he did, that he was paid in both of these deals that had similar arrangements, where he took home close to $10 million after spending quite a bit of time telling the public what a civically minded individual he was by doing all this work for free simply because he hoped to save the city of San Diego some money.
Let's dial this back. Let's try to understand everything that's going on here. I think the most important thing to understand is that the city has employees, and a lot of them work throughout the city, not just in city buildings, right? A lot of them work in buildings that are owned by other people, and they rent space just like any other office workers. The city, long ago, under Mayor Jerry Sanders, tried to build a new city hall. They did not succeed in doing this, in part because a local commercial real estate expert named Jason Hughes analyzed their numbers about how much money this would save to move everybody into their own city building and said those numbers are bunk. You could actually do better just renegotiating the leases that you have in these privately owned buildings. He said, in fact, I can do that for you. I can renegotiate these leases for you for free. You should take me up on that offer.
Yeah, if I could just interject on that, because I think it's interesting that you mentioned Jerry Sanders. If I was going to do like a Politico-style winners and losers of 101 Ash Street, I think like Jerry Sanders is actually a clear winner when all is said and done. So I was going back through Lisa's story explaining Jason Hughes's role in this, and she unearthed this quote about Jerry Sanders' response when Jason Hughes approached him with this like offer to be a volunteer. And a Sanders spokesman said, "The city gladly welcomes volunteers to help out at libraries and rec centers, but we don't use them to conduct multi-million dollar transactions involving taxpayer money." Well done, Jerry Sanders. That is not how you use a city volunteer, it turns out.
Well,
yeah.
Jerry Sanders left office, gave way to another mayor named Bob Filner. Bob Filner did a lot of things differently, and one of the things was he embraced this offer to renegotiate these leases with Jason Hughes and taking his services for free. When they got their first lease deal, he did do some new lease deals that did save the city money. When they announced one of the first ones, here was what Jason Hughes said about his service to the city.
Look, I look at this as not only a civic duty, but also a way to protect the rest of my clients in downtown. And it's not just this savings. It's not just the commission I'm foregoing. It's looking at all of my clients over the next 5 to 10 years of making sure that we set the bottom where it should be and not be inflated where everybody ends up spending a lot more money. So, you know, we are a very charitable company. We give to more than 70 charities every year, and this is one of our ways of giving back. So I'm proud to do it.
So he goes about doing this, renegotiating. He worked really well with Bob Filner. Bob Filner obviously had trouble. He ends up flaming out.
Two points there. One, from time to time in City Hall, you'll not really in City Hall, but in the world around it, you'll still find some people who think that that the public affairs world of San Diego has been too hasty to discard all of the Filner legacy due to the reasons that he was eventually pushed out of office. And so in that political winners and losers piece that Sarah's writing in her head, another one might be like the nascent effort to retcon the Filner administration as one that had a lot of like overlooked victories, because this would be one of those overlooked victories, which it turns out was in fact, not a victory at all, because it was the inverse of the Sanders situation, basically. Where Sanders said, accept a volunteer to do multi-million dollar real estate transactions, Filner said, accept a volunteer to do multi-million dollar real estate transactions. Boy, howdy. So that didn't age well.
Yeah.
But also, I want to add the context from that Hughes quote, where he's not only just positioning himself as like offering charity to the city, although he's doing that too. He's also positioning himself as like as in a business role as the champion of the little man, that the tenants in this big game of commercial real estate are the salt of the earth, the salt of San Diego, the real nuts and bolts of what makes our economy tick, and that he's out looking for them whereas the landlords are the bad guys in the situation. And if he can do this for the city, it's in service of all the other mom and pop shops that are just looking for an affordable rent. And so it's charity that he gets to spread around in two ways simultaneously.
Right. Okay, so just before we go on, full disclosure, we were one of those tenants. I got to know Jason Hughes. He became a sponsor of Voice of San Diego. Through that, my wife started doing graphic design and marketing work for him and for his firm, and he helped us negotiate our own lease at the building right across the street from Ash Street, and was a sponsor until the end of 2018 here at Voice of San Diego. So that said, so again, he was really moving up in the world of public affairs. So Bob Filner flames out and, of course, is replaced by Todd Gloria, the interim mayor, which wasn't a title that existed, but he was his service to the city continued under this interim mayor system. And at that point, there starts to be other sort of bigger problems arising when Kevin Faulkner is elected mayor. So again, we have a Republican mayor, we have a Democratic mayor, we have a Democratic interim mayor, and now we have another Republican mayor, all of whom have decided to embrace this volunteer, civic, good advisor for the cities and its giant real estate challenge, which is that there's a lot of people who work for the city who need a place to work. So remember, one of the first things that came up in Faulkner's administration was that he needed to figure out a stadium solution for the Chargers. And one of the people he put on the task force to lead the task force that was going to come up with an answer for it was Jason Hughes.
And they did. They solved it. And
yeah,
they just kept playing football. It's great.
And looking forward to attending some San Diego Chargers games now that I'm vaccinated. And they'll be back. We'll all be back in the stadium, which we have.
But at this point, there was an issue. That tower that's across the plaza from City Hall, Civic Center Plaza, was owned by a group of investors, and the ownership was frustrated with the city. The city had been talking about buying the building. The city couldn't get its act together to buy the building. And Faulkner says to Jason Hughes, I need you to help figure this out. Now, the city ended up doing something where a company, Sestera Real Estate Development Group, had helped Sempra get a new headquarters in the East Village, that gleaming, shiny building across from Petco Park. Sempra had moved into that. This company, Sestera, was good at getting stuff like that done. Jason Hughes had a good relationship with them. He calls them up and says, how about this? How about you buy the building from the ownership, this Civic Center Plaza building across from City Hall? How about you buy it? This company, Sestera, comes in, purchases that building across from City Hall, and immediately signs a lease-to-own deal with the city so that the city, after 20 years, can own this building into perpetuity. The city attorney can have her office there, or who's ever the city attorney can live and work in that office into perpetuity.
They couldn't live there, but go ahead. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough.
Maybe they could.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. So, by zoning, they're not supposed to.
So that was the first sort of model of a deal that the city would consider again. Fast forward a couple of years, and the city has another challenge. There's several hundred city employees, including many from the Development Services Department, which does the permitting, and they say, we need a place to work, sir. And Jason Hughes again gets on this task, looks right across the street to 101 Ash Street, the former, again, headquarters of the company Sempra. Now, it's well-positioned. It's not the nicest building, but the city has a lot worse buildings. There's only one problem with this building. There's a guy who owns it named Sandy Shapery, and he has sold part of the building to another man, a man named Doug Manchester. Doug Manchester is a bit better known than Sandy Shapery. Fair, Sarah?
I think so.
Manchester, of course, known as the controversial real estate developer, hotel magnate, Republican Party firebrand. He had owned the Union Tribune for the couple years before this and done a lot of very strident conservative commentaries, had a very close relationship with Donald Trump, a lot of things like that. And he was a big supporter of the mayor, Kevin Faulkner. And so there was discussions about the city purchasing this building that Doug Manchester owns a big part of. And for whatever reason, whether it was the political concern about how that would look if the city bought something so expensive from somebody like Doug Manchester with all his ties to the mayor and to the future president and such, or whether it was just they couldn't get the right deal, they could not agree on a price.
I just, like, of the many twists and turns and ironies in this story, the fact that, like, part of it might have been motivated by, like, well, we've got to avoid the bad optics.
Yeah, of a conflict of interest.
We really don't want this deal to look bad. So what we're going to do is this whole other structure. I mean, like, I think largely if we're going to run with the winners and losers, like, obviously Kevin Faulkner has a lot to answer for. A lot of bad decisions were made and they kind of lay at his feet. But, like, you know, good for him that he was concerned about, like, hey,
how is this going to look?
Yeah. Well, sorta, except that the solution that they settled on, such as it is, didn't result in Doug Manchester losing any amount of money.
Right.
Yeah. So, again, Jason Hughes says, how about we do that same thing we did before? This company, Sestera, will come in, purchase that building from Doug Manchester and Sandy Schapery, and then immediately, literally immediately, turn around and lease it to the city in a lease-to-own deal. They don't have to borrow money to do it. They don't have to worry about having purchased it from Doug Manchester. All these things work out, and it's a done deal.
Yeah, I think they, like, literally hit copy and paste, and they're like, beep, boop, Civic Center, boop, boop, 101 Ash.
Right. Now,
that's how computers sound.
So that happened. Now, we might not be talking about this at all if what happened next had not happened. What happened next is that the city needed to prepare the building for its hundreds of workers, and they got a contractor, a few contractors, and their own workers in there to start to prepare the building. We're not entirely sure what exactly happened, but like many buildings of this age, it has asbestos in the walls. You're not supposed to disturb that and asbestos, or if you do, you're supposed to control it very well. They both disturbed it and did not control it very well.
So I would add, though, also that just like in general, the building was in considerably worse condition than they thought and that they were led to believe, which in addition to the asbestos, which was eventually a problem area, just in general made that whole construction management effort a bigger deal than they had anticipated at the time of the transaction. And that's not a supposition. We have multiple council meetings where they talk about what wonderful condition the building is in and that it's move-in ready,
just
which turned out
not to be
the truth.
Just right? Just like, like some kind of wash. So I remember around this time hearing from somebody at City Hall that this is a real problem. And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, I remember they bought that building. They haven't moved into it yet. I wonder what's going on. And shortly after that, Jeff McDonald at the UT publishes that first story about how the city was spending, what was it, $18,000 a day on the building, and yet no city employees were working out of it. It was becoming an issue.
Correct. Yeah.
So at that...
It became an issue.
Yeah, boy, it did. So at that point, people are like, what happened? What's going on? The mayor, Kevin Faulkner, starts to feel immense pressure to get this resolved. And then there was this moment where They thought they got it controlled, and they moved the city employees in, right? How long did that last, Andy?
I think it was like a week. I think it was within the first week they were in the building. They were
immediately
evacuated out of an abundance of caution. I remember when I heard as it was happening that they were being evacuated, it very quickly staffers were like, but it's not an emergency. That we just wanted to be doubly careful. So we immediately told all of the city staff to get out of the building.
Immediately.
Which is different than an emergency evacuation. Just an immediate departure. Emergency evacuation, immediate departure. Right. It's how I prefer we describe it. Yeah, sure.
And then you fast forward to the time that Tal Gloria visited it in like a full hazmat suit.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So, more abundance of caution.
Right. So when they were immediately evacuated, I think that's the moment where the scandal erupts, right? Like,
yeah. When Jeff first started writing about it, it was like this low simmering bad thing that was happening in the city. And the city was still publicly arguing that it was a really good deal and they were going to save plenty of money. When the construction work had gone bad and they had to get evacuated, that was when it blossomed into a full scandal, that there was a big, big problem.
But still, the scandal was what I would call a scandal of incompetence, right? How had the city allowed this to happen? How come we couldn't just move employees in? What had happened with the construction? Was it a bad building they shouldn't have bought? Remember, it starts to become an issue in the 2020 mayor's race. Over the years, this thing builds up as they say, why did Todd Gloria agree on the city council to purchase it? And then back to Barbara Bree, why did Barbara Bree agree to spend so much money to renovate it? It was just this like ongoing mess about who agreed to what, who screwed up and didn't allow this to work. But it was a scandal of incompetence. Who had let this happen?
Yeah, Barbara Bree really tried to make this kind of like one of the centerpieces of her campaign, and her pitch was just sort of like, I would be more diligent, or I would read through things with a fine-tooth comb, like the underlying assumption being that they just like didn't do due diligence. They didn't know what they were doing. They, you know, just general, like, I would be more careful and I would be smarter.
Yeah. Specifically her, you know, her one of her major barbs was that the contract indemnified the seller, which was, you know, she said the irresponsible thing to do, that you should have, the there should have been recourse for the city when they realized the true condition.
So meanwhile, we decide, Lisa Halverstadt and Jesse Marks, you, me, a bunch of other people, to try to understand in more depth what happened with this deal. How did this deal happen? Did anyone make money off of it? What were the decision makers thinking when this happened? So Lisa Halverstadt in particular starts doing a lot of investigative journalism, pulling a lot of documents, and starts to piece a lot of this together. In fact, realizes, I think one of the first to realize, that this was intimately connected with that previous building deal, the Civic Center Plaza deal, and that a lot of this was the same sort of situation. The city, for whatever reason, we're still not entirely clear why, did not want to borrow money and buy a building like it might normally do, that it wanted instead to pursue these lease-to-own deals. Lisa uncovers that, in fact, the architect of both of those deals is Jason Hughes. Again, this volunteer real estate advisor who at this point is still very intimately involved in upper management of the city's real estate transactions. Again, he had been involved in the Chargers issue, and he had, as she discovered, put in a bid to try to be the construction management firm for this 101 Ash Street building that he had wanted. This was when he was, at least from our knowledge, the first time he actually wanted to get paid for something, because he wanted his team, his construction management team, to oversee what was going to happen to that building. So at this point, something else happens. Cisterra to purchase the 101 Ash Street building and then immediately lease it to the city had had to borrow like $90 million, right? And the city was unable to account for where about $14 million of that had gone. Lisa was the first to break the fact that the city had no idea where $14 million had gone. It's a lot of money. And we begin to wonder whether anybody had made money off of this or how much money Cisterra and some of these other people had made on this deal. And she discovers a document related to that previous deal, Civic Center Plaza, where Jason Hughes had told the city staff that if he's going to work on a lease-to-own deal for the city for that building, he's going to want to get paid because it's going to be harder to do. So she does that story. She asks Jason Hughes and the city, did Jason Hughes get paid? The city says to her, no, not to our knowledge. And then she asks Jason Hughes himself, did you get paid on this? No. So about, what was it, 6 months ago, 7 months ago, Lisa does a story about Jason Hughes. He's the one that came up with this deal. He was the one that helped the city get into it. Let's understand his role as a volunteer and whether, you know, he got involved in this and was, you know, how it all came together. She asks him in that about the 101 Ash Street. Did you get paid in that deal? And he says, quote, I have too much respect for the principals of the 101 Ash Street transaction to discuss their business dealings in the press, especially when those principals are involved in litigation. But you can be absolutely sure that I would not participate in any transaction without making the requisite disclosures. Any assertion to the contrary would be defamatory.
Yeah, so that's not a no followed by a thinly veiled threat.
Right. Not a no. Right. You could say no. Yeah. I didn't get paid, and then you could do the threat.
Rereading that, re-listening to that quote again, it's almost a yes. It's not even quite a not a no. It's basically a yes. It's basically like yes, I got paid, but if you say that it was wrong of me to do that, then I'll sue you. Would be one way to describe that quote.
The city said we have no knowledge of him having gotten paid. We don't think he got paid. And he was a volunteer. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of Downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
Now we can get up to the news that came out this week. The city attorney hoping to try to get the city out of this building entirely released a couple of lawsuits that she filed to try to unravel the deal. But in that, she revealed that she subpoenaed information about Hughes and Cisterra and discovered in that process that, yes, in fact, Hughes had gotten paid $5 million for the Civic Center Plaza deal and $4.4 million for the 101 Ash Street deal from Cisterra. So that was the first bit of news as we discovered, like, oh my gosh, this guy who had been assumed to be a volunteer for the city had actually gotten paid quite a bit. And then she made the assertion that because he got paid, he was actually had a violation of the law in the criminal sort of conflict of interest. And thus, because there was a conflict of interest, she could unwind both of these deals and, in fact, collect all of the money the city had been paying in rent to both properties, resetting the landscape and, you know, I guess forcing a negotiation about what would happen in the future. So now there's sort of two or three questions, Andy, that come up. One is, Jason Hughes has decided, and along with Cestera, that their best defense in this situation was to very quickly acknowledge that, yes, indeed, he had gotten paid. After all these years of everybody assuming that he was a volunteer, after, you know, those kinds of statements like the one we ran before, that in fact he did make a lot of money.
Also suggests that maybe he no longer has respect for the principals involved in the transaction.
Yeah.
because, you know, previously he had too much respect for them to possibly answer this question. So.
Yes. So.
Right.
And he didn't just get like a $10,000 finder's fee or whatever.
Yeah. It went from like nothing. I am a volunteer. I make zero and I am very loud about it to millions of dollars.
To much more than most San Diego Padres players will receive this year.
So he made, $9.4 million in these deals. Now, look, if you're going to make millions of dollars in deals with the city, as often, I guess, happens around the world, seems like A, should be part of a competitive bidding process, right? Like there should be other chances for other people to make that money. And B, it should be disclosed.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be us having to ask and, you know, this should be open. And as the city attorney points out, he never filed this Form 700 disclosure. Andy, tell the good people out there what a Form 700 is.
It is a financial disclosure for city officials who are deemed to have some sort of qualifying reason, like elected officials always have to have them. Some of their upper-level staffers need to have them, and then contractors or consultants in limited circumstances need to have them. And so you need to report all of your sources of income so that the public has an opportunity to determine whether there was some sort of conflict of interest when you were working allegedly on the public's behalf. We want to have an opportunity to see whether there's any reason to doubt whether you were fully working on the public's behalf or whether you were working on your own behalf or somebody else's behalf, unbeknownst to us. And the disclosure process is supposed to bring that all out into the light and where it will be sanitized by the sun.
Okay, so neither was there a competitive bidding process, nor was there a public disclosure about this this thing. And he had basically gotten these gigs because he had made his way, again, through Republican and Democratic mayoral administrations into a position where he could help them solve this problem. And then, frankly, brilliantly, at least until now, put himself in a position to be the one to get one of the biggest commercial real estate clients that exist in San Diego. I mean, could there can't be that many other clients in San Diego bigger than the city of San Diego.
No, there might be. There's only a handful of people who employ more people, and to the extent that employees translates to office space, it's going to certainly be one of the most lucrative clients that a person in his line of work can land. It's hard to avoid the conclusion that he used this suggestion that he was volunteering as a backdoor way into the position to later enrich himself on it. And that if he hadn't started as a volunteer, that would have been a process that was either competitively bid or that the city relied on their own employees to conduct. And that those employees would be required to disclose their financial interests. You know, it was a backdoor around, or it was an attempt at a backdoor around all these public interest laws.
I think part of the thing that's going on here is that commercial real estate, the fees paid to the people who facilitate these transactions are baked into the price of a lease or to, you know, and part of the argument he was making is, look, as a volunteer, I am saving you that. There's going to be no inflation to the cost because I'm not going to take a commission from this. And you don't have to pay a commission to the landlord's broker because we're going to help this all happen and it's all going to keep the prices down. He even said in a San Diego Daily Transcript article, as they were talking about the value of him doing this, the city hired private consultancies to conduct its real estate negotiations on a commission basis, meaning that the higher the price tag on the property, the more money they made. And thus, you know, he was going to remove all these bad incentives from this. And so,
yeah. And if like the whole lease to own deal was predicated on the idea of avoiding bad optics, then like representing both sides of a party is bad optics and has, you know, the potential for things to go wrong and for taxpayers to not get the best deal.
So Hughes and Sestera come out with this information. Again, after many years and months of us trying to figure out what exactly happened, they just say like, well, here's what happened. And we're like, well, what's going on there? And it becomes immediately clear why they're doing this. And why they're doing this is because they have decided that their best defense for what has happened is to argue that, yes, it happened, but the mayor, Mayor Kevin Faulkner, and his real estate staff and his top staff knew and supported it. So how can you say that it was, you know, just Jason with a conflict of interest? In fact, they all know this, and this is what happened, which carries with it a couple of implications. One is, it says, it basically implies that the mayor has been lying, former mayor Kevin Faulkner has been lying along with his top staff for many years now, and helping hide that one of the top advisors, volunteer advisors for the city, actually had gotten paid nearly $10 million over the last 5-6 years in helping the city negotiate these things in deals that were not disclosed to the public. That seems bad. It seems, in fact, like one of the biggest scandals I've ever heard of related to city politics. That's the one side. But there's a new wrinkle. As we discovered Monday night and Tuesday, the former mayor, Kevin Faulkner, and his top staff very clearly and definitively deny that this happened. They say, no, we didn't know he was getting paid. And in fact, Stephen Pitts, who was the chief of staff of Mayor Kevin Faulkner, says, no, that didn't happen. And it was completely unethical for him to make money in this situation. He was a volunteer. So that brings up the central mystery of the situation, which is, did the mayor know? Because if he did, again, it's a huge scandal. And if he didn't, then he was hoodwinked by this guy for many years who made $10 million off the city, almost.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the way you've described it there is correct, because that is a very important question to know the answer to, but it's a very important question politically. Because as I described the purpose of Form 700 and the purpose of public disclosure, those requirements are not satisfied by like walking to some person who has a desk in City Hall and being like, oh, by the way, I'm going to get some money on this. So just so you know, like I've now satisfied that public disclosure requirement. Because like I told you and you told me and like Sharon over there, she heard it. So like everything's cool, right?
Yeah.
Like that. And that's basically what they're alleging. Like they're like, see, look at these text messages where we talk about how I'm going to get paid. Like, hey, look, I promise I had a conversation with this other person where I said I was going to get paid. Like, that is not public disclosure. That is not what we mean by public disclosure. Those are not formal documentation by which we can anyone who has an interest can ascertain whether there were cross incentives here. And so the city attorney has responded to these sort of like, this evidence that Hughes has held up in the press and said like, okay, good for you. It's cool that those.
Let's get into that for a second. So So we go back to, or Lisa goes back to Hughes and says, what do you mean you did this? And they produce basically three things. One is they say Jason Hughes met with the mayor and his chief of staff and said, I need to get paid will you help me just make sure you're clear that you know I'm going to get paid, because this is hard. This isn't like the volunteering I was doing. This is hard. This is going to take a lot more effort, and I'm going to seek payment from it. Of course not from you. And he says in here, please note, I will continue to honor my arrangement with the city and will make clear that any eventual landlord to that there will not be any leasing fee whatsoever for me or on my behalf. So he's trying to say, like, look, this isn't going to cost you anything, but I'm going to get paid. So he goes, he says, I had this meeting with the mayor where this happened. Lisa goes and looks at her calendar that she has requested from the mayor and sees, in fact, that there was a five-minute meeting that very day that Jason says there was. And he provides a letter where he says, quote, I have previously made clear in correspondence to the city that any alternative deal would require me to play a few different roles due to the increased complexity and time demand. As a result, I would seek to be paid customary compensation from any other parties in the transaction. Will you acknowledge this? He says he signs it. And then the director of real estate assets of the city of San Diego, Savelle Thompson, supposedly signs it. Now, Lisa asks, sir, did you sign this? And she says, no, I don't remember it. And then she asks the mayor and the former mayor's chief of staff, did they remember this? Nah, they don't remember it either.
They don't remember it, but she also has texts that refer to getting Sabelle to do something.
Yes.
Which sort of indicates, you know, perhaps that was a wholly unrelated matter. But there are texts saying, like, hey, don't forget to follow up with Sabelle about the thing that we talked about.
So there's two things going on here. I think to Annie's point, does this exonerate the situation? Is this a legal argument that's good? Doesn't seem like it's a very full disclosure of what Jason Hughes is getting out of it. So I think that's the legal side. The other side, though, is did the mayor and his top staff know that this was happening? Well, that's still interesting besides the legal question, right? Is that fair to say, Andy?
Yeah, oh, it's yes, it's still fascinating. And I mean, it's very much up in the air. I suppose both questions are to some extent up in the air. But the political question is, you've got two completely irreconcilable arguments being made. One is, I totally told those people we had multiple conversations about it and I have evidence. And the other is, he didn't tell us. Don't know what to tell you. We never heard anything about it. And if he did, that's unethical.
Yeah. You didn't tell us, and it was completely unethical for you to make money off this deal.
There's no way to split. Yeah. There's no way to split that baby so both of them are right somehow.
No. And so that's a big mystery. Again, more of a political mystery. But the other question is, was his conflict of interest bad enough? So let's get into this. There's this law called the California State Law 1090. It says you can't have a conflict of interest in doing the public's business like this. The city attorney's argument is that was what was violated here. And one of the remedies for that is that whatever deal that person with the conflict of interest was involved in can be completely unwound. And that's what they're hoping to do. They want to shed their role and responsibility over this lemon of a building, and they want to get their money back. That's her goal. She thinks she has a good case for it. And I guess that's what we're going to have to wait and see whether it's true or not.
Can I add one? Do we have a moment for a small detour?
Absolutely. This is Detour Central.
All right, so you might remember a few weeks ago I wrote a story about a hotel that was purchased by the San Diego Housing Commission.
I do remember that, Andy.
Okay.
Why don't you refresh us a little bit?
Well, there was a hotel that was purchased in Mission Valley by the San Diego Housing Commission, and it had been discovered and then analyzed and then concluded that by the San Diego Housing Commission's lawyers that the broker who they relied on for this transaction had, in between contracting with them and executing the transaction, had purchased many shares of the company that owned that hotel. And
certainly had a perception of a conflict.
Yes, and then had earned in excess of his agreed upon commission in that transaction, and that this constituted a criminal conflict of interest was the conclusion of the San Diego Housing Commission's lawyers. But the detour I'd like to get to is that Mara Elliott here says that she has seen a criminal conflict of interest and says that that is justification for stripping the deal down to its to the beginning and reversing it, to ending the transaction, to getting out from these deals. The San Diego Housing Commission, having come to the same conclusion, has said the only issue at play here is whether or not we can recoup some of the commission that this guy received. They have essentially unilaterally taken off the table the possibility of reversing that transaction. So two entities of the city of San Diego with very different legal strategies in very similar circumstances, frankly.
Yeah, I think those are... Do we have any reason to understand why the Housing Commission has taken this different approach?
Well, I think the basic reason is that they like the building and want to keep owning it, whereas the city of San Diego feels like they're really in a sore spot and they don't want the building. The long and the short of it, really.
I mean, that's not nothing, though. If the whole thing that kicked off the Ash Street scandal was that the building was unusable, if they're like, hey, we like this building and we're going to keep using it.
Yeah, it's a big difference. What I would just argue is that at the onset of a legal issue, you need not publicly declare that some of your opportunities are dumb, wrong, and immaterial.
Yeah, just like Jason Hughes didn't say, no, I didn't get paid in that one statement. You can just like not say, this is dumb, shut up.
Right.
Everything's great.
Yeah, but the Housing Commission has a communication strategy, and it was on display when they had that public statement a couple weeks ago.
So as to the question of whether they won the building or not, I mean, I think that's what's so interesting about this. So Jason Hughes was furious that his construction management team didn't get the job to oversee the retrofit of this old building for the city. And you have to wonder, now looking back, that he was so mad about that. Part of the reason he was probably so mad about that is because he knew if something went wrong, a lot of this might come out. Because
or said another way, for this arrangement to come to light required many, many things going wrong in quick succession. And had any one of them not gone wrong, then this arrangement might not have come out. And if he was the person in control of deciding how many things could go wrong, he would be in a much better position to make sure that that arrangement never came to light.
Right. So it's one of those moments in this sort of business where you're like, man, how many other things are going on that you never hear about because it didn't turn into a complete cluster in the media because of this or that, you know, asbestos or earthquake unearthing this or whatever. And it's just a classic moment. But I think looking back, a lot of people, like you said, the winners, the losers, you know, the question of focusing, as Lisa did, on how the deal came together and the dynamics about that proved to be very interesting. And we all suspected maybe this kind of information would come out, but wow, I did not suspect $9.4 million would have been paid, nor that it would be used as an argument that the entire deal could be unwound. So an incredible moment in this scandal, another chapter comes, and much bigger than whatever we were talking about before, about like footnotes to investigative reports and, you know, who made what motion and stuff like that. This is big stuff.
Yeah, although that said, like, Faulkner is not the mayor anymore.
Right.
Todd Gloria is now the mayor. Mara Elliott sort of bridged the issue. She sort of inherited it at the beginning from Jan Goldsmith, but then has been the city attorney in charge of the city's response for a long time now. And while it's Faulkner who's getting his time in the Tumblr right now, I think it's not necessarily obvious that there won't be other people who get dragged into this with continued revelations, especially if this thing ever goes to court. What we learned yesterday was the result of the city making a legal decision and that becoming public. That's going to happen repeatedly going forward, and who knows who else gets dragged into this thing.
And it's also,
or people who've already been dragged into it get that role comes back into light again.
There's and then there's this question about commercial real estate as well, and I think it's Hughes not only made this big point about representing tenants, he actually engaged with other local politicians to pass laws along this line. This isn't just a foreign concept to him. This was the basis of his entire argument, of his separation statement from the rest of the industry. He passed, along with Ben Weso and supported Ben Weso to get this done, a law that required landlords, brokers who represent both landlords and tenants to disclose very clearly when they represented both sides. As he says in his own blog post, Hughes Marino is a disruptor. We believe the tenants who pay rent for office space are the consumer, not the landlord. We believe that the tenant should be entitled to the best objective, conflict-free advice and our representation and the best representation available. We never represent landlords. Moreover, our brokers are prohibited from accepting kickbacks or vendor referrals of any kind. And then in parentheses, he says, which is alarmingly prevalent in our industry. Hughes Marino clients can rely on our brokers to provide 100% objective, conflict-free professional advice. And he also features on his website a quote from
Would it be weird if I got that tattooed on my back just because it's so perfect and I love it? Would that be a strange move for me? People at the beach would be like, can you explain that? I'd be like, well, do you have an hour?
Yeah.
Sit here and listen to this podcast. Wait till the end. It's going to deliver, I promise. I mean, in journalism, you see some sort of press release or some sort of statement. Anytime you see the words out of abundance of caution, that's a flag should go up. There's something going on here. I would say that in the private space, that some company describing themselves as a disruptor also should send up that same flag. And so so for Hughes to begin with, we are a disruptive company, it's like, yes, sir. And how?
I guess I'd leave on this note. On his website still today, Hughes Marino has the quote, Hughes Marino has been an invaluable asset to the city of San Diego. Jason and his team have saved the city tens of millions of dollars. And for that, we are very grateful. A quote from the Honorable Kevin Faulkner, mayor, former mayor, City of San Diego. So quite a week in this story. Sarah, do you have any other sort of winners or losers in this tally?
I would say that we are the losers, because while this was a good discussion, it wasn't fueled by White Claw this time, and I think that was a misfire on our part.
Yes, that's a good point. Should have had the White
Claw. I've got a winner, or what should be a winner.
Okay.
That is stories about public officials who failed to file Form 700s, filed incomplete or inadequate Form 700s, or any sort of potential appearance of conflict discovered on Form 700s. There's a sort of sleazy spin merchant, a type of sleazy spin merchant that exists out there that waits for those types of stories to be written and to publicly dismiss them as paperwork errors or irrelevant transgressions that journalists are dwelling on only because they are professionally cynical. And time and again, we see that where it appears there's some sort of oversight that is not actually part of a scandal, that there was in fact scandalous behavior underneath that oversight. And so I would just like to take an opportunity to suggest that we should take those things seriously when they are reported, because rules exist for a reason.
And for anyone out there doing these kinds of things, you might consider filing a Form 700. I'm not going to say it's never too late, because it may be too late, but you might as well give it a shot, because it certainly looks better to have done it.
Yeah.
All right. Is that good?
Yeah, that's great.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in various parts of San Diego and Maryland this week. Maryland, it's the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in those particular settings. You know, maybe we'll actually just measure whether it's the most popular public affairs podcast anywhere in San Diego, but that would take market research and those kinds of things. So I'm going to stick with the way we describe it. Keep up with all of our big investigations and takes on local news with The Morning Report, our most popular newsletter. Subscribe now at vosd.org/newsletters. And if stories like this matter to you, if you think the work is important, if you want to be able to understand and follow public affairs, please support it. You can give the Voice of San Diego to ensure we can keep going. You can do that at vosd.org/donate. I'm Scott Lewis, editor-in-chief at Voice San Diego. Andrew Keats is assistant editor. Sarah Libby's managing editor. This show is produced expertly by Nate John. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.